amazing Cultures to Parent support group are sponsoring this series of the Multi-Schools Lowdown. We offer support for families of children and young people with special educational needs in the Colchester area. To learn more and get in touch, please visit the MAYS website, themaysgroup.co.uk.
In this episode, we hear all about how medical conditions can have a massive effect on children and their families. We talk about Pan's Panda, which historically has gone undiagnosed and is misunderstood by many. Jane talks openly about her experience with her three boys, and it's a real insight into the effects that these things can have on families. Okay, so Jane, could you just start by telling us about your three boys?
Yeah, I've got my older boy, who is 13. He has been poorly, I think, maybe since he was a toddler. We didn't really know, because some of the behaviours that he was exhibiting were quite normal for toddler behaviours, really, oppositional behaviour, showing maybe signs of jealousy towards younger siblings, that sort of thing. A lot of it could have been sort of classed as middle child syndrome, but he was different. And I knew there was something, but sort of life was busy and we had newborn twins, so I didn't really pay much attention to the finer detail. Really bad separation anxiety at nursery, which then one carried on into school. By the time he was in year four, he had developed facial and vocal tics. So he was grunting, tossing his head back, grabbing his throat. His anxiety was really high, which was based around school playground bullying. I now think, with hindsight, that he was having intrusive thoughts and his view on the world was very different to what everybody else's was. I do think there was issues at school, but maybe things were enhanced to him. He'd also, around the same time, his eyesight had declined, so he started needing glasses. Didn't really think anything of it. And then his handwriting deteriorated in class. So his teacher picked up on that and she said his handwriting has become really scruffy. We're going to do some occupational therapy tests, which came back that his left hand was showing stronger than his right hand, which we found a little bit odd, but again, didn't think too much of it. They gave him a wrist support and a thick pencil, which tried to improve his fine motor skill, which seemed to work. He just carried on spiralling, really, just not able to cope. His anxieties were, it was mainly around issues with boys at school, but he would come home from school, he would be offloading for a couple of hours, he was upset, emotional. By the time he was maybe year six, he was developing intrusive thoughts, and I just thought it was all anxiety-based. We'd been to the doctor several times, we just kept getting told we'll have a referral to CAMHS and it's just anxiety. But life was just a struggle for him, and his behaviour changed. He became very oppositional, argumentative with siblings. He started senior school. The summer holidays did him the world of good. He had a break. He seemed to calm down a little bit. And then when he started senior school, day one was just horrendous for him. Couldn't cope with the boys in the playground. Things they were saying, you know, the kids are getting older. They're sort of going through hormonal changes. They were starting to say rude things, looking at rude things on the phones. But that would trigger him massively. He really couldn't cope with those sorts of conversations. And he was really struggling with it. So he would come home from school every single night for a couple of hours, offload his troubles through the day. And he just wasn't coping. And it got to the point where he wasn't getting any support from anywhere, really. And I just pulled him out because, to me, I saw a suicide vision, really. You know, that's all I could think of. This kid is not going to survive to year 11. Mm. And then he got worse, actually. He seemed to get better for a while, but then he got worse. And all of a sudden, he developed severe contamination OCD. And one of my friends suggested I look into Pan's Pandas. I did, and he ticked every single box. But it wasn't like your classic sudden onset. It was like, it was almost like his symptoms were drawn out over 10 years. But then when I started piecing the small things together, it was quite obvious that he had the diagnostic criteria from being quite young. We just didn't recognise what was happening with him. I went to my GP and asked for help. I joined the Pans Pandas UK Facebook group, support group for parents. I got lots of support from there. We battled with the correct help through the GP, because the illness just isn't widely recognised in the, well, it's not across the world, really. I'm going to say UK because that's where we are. We asked for a referral to see a specialist, and we've just hit so many obstacles and hurdles along the way. And just as I was sort of getting my head around the illness and the impact on Lewis and on the family, the twins then started developing strange symptoms. And they'd had a really bad chest infection in the November. They recovered maybe after about 10 days, 2 weeks, didn't think anything of it. By Christmas, Nicholas had developed a head tick, so his head was flicking to the side. And my heart sank. I thought, the only other experience I've got with a child with ticks is PANS. My husband tried to reassure me and said, don't overthink it. Don't look into it too much. You know, it could be anything. So I just sort of observed him for a couple of weeks. They're normally so confident. They were doing well at school. They were helping other children that were struggling. They were your typical run-of-the-mill average kids, really.
Yeah.
And Matthew one night struggled going to bed. He was like, Mum, I can't leave the room. I was like, don't be silly. Go on, off you go. Because, you know, normally they're quite independent. Slowly, day by day, we were seeing different behaviours. They were becoming argumentative, oppositional. But then Matthew was crying for nothing. He would just have these meltdowns. He would just break down. But he couldn't explain what was happening. And then, you know, by this point, I'm thinking, this is it. This is two more onset of this horrific illness. And I really didn't know at that point how we would cope. Bearing in mind that we're not really getting proper treatment for the older boy. He's on antibiotics, which is the first port of call, really. By, I think it was the beginning of February, went to my GP and said, look, we're in a pretty horrific state here. So by this time, they were both showing suicidal tendencies. They said that they wanted to die. They felt like family members didn't love them. They would fight with each other, which they wouldn't normally. I had noticed Nicholas's handwriting had declined, and that was the first thing I said. I said, Nicholas, just write me a little sentence on this paper. And for me, that was my way of maybe monitoring, is there something going on here with inflammation in the brain? And his handwriting was terrible. And I asked Matthew to do the same, bearing in mind that the twins, so their onset was at the same time, which I suspect was from the chest infection, but they were displaying slightly different symptoms. And then you've got to try and get your head around how you approach this with professionals, because it seems so unlikely that three children can, you know, from the same family will have this condition. My fear was not being believed. So we took as much video footage as we could. When I look back at the footage now, it just horrifies me how bad things were. So, you know, during COVID, really, it actually did us a favour, because we had the perfect opportunity for the boys to heal and hopefully, you know, their immune system to recover. So being in lockdown was good for me, really, so that, you know, we could give them that best opportunity. We struggled with help on the NHS. There's just not adequate treatment. So we went private. We had to set up an online fundraiser. Managed to get referrals to Alderhay Hospital. Alderhay wrote to us and said that the neurologist that deals with children with PANS has gone on long-term leave, and the other neurologists don't support the diagnosis of PANS PANDAS, and we should just be referred to CAMHS, and basically discharged us. So that was it. Was at that point I needed to go private. They did it to all the families across the UK, we haven't seen anyone other than my local paediatrician. So with this in mind, we then have no backup for educational provision. Boys just feel now like they, because they're so poorly through the day, we go hour by hour, not day by day. And they can be okay 1 hour, and then we manage them with medication, and then they're feeling okay later on. But they can't attend a 6-hour session in school. It's just not viable for them. Some children do, some children manage it, but my three, well, it's the twins at the minute, are in such a chronic state that they couldn't do it. And I think that's when they went back to school in September, they were masking all day. They were holding it together. They felt like they had to act normal and fit in and comply with the rules. And then when they come home, we had a 4-hour meltdown, which was, you know, because the illness is so complex and difficult to manage with the lack of support, really. You know, we've got a private doctor who is in Scotland, and we either Zoom or telephone or email. That would be the same if he was in Scunthorpe at the minute with the COVID regulations. But just not having somebody directing you a bit more closely, I guess, it's just really difficult. So at the minute, they're not getting any education because there's nothing that can be done locally. The support, I've been told, can only be put in place if they manage to get into school, which the school has been quite good at the minute. We've just made contact with the school social worker, and she's trying to do her best to get some support put in place for the boys. So, yeah, we're just waiting on that, really.
I mean, I've just let you speak there, Jane, because I think there's so much, though, and I've got so many questions written down now, separate to what I had in front of me even before speaking to you. I just want to start with, I think it's really good for people who are listening, because like myself, I'll be very honest, I have very minimal knowledge on PAS Pandas until you've spoken about it. Can you just describe really what it is from your perspective?
Yeah. So when I first started looking at the illness, it became obvious that the description of PAS Pandas is a misdirected immune response. So it's an autoimmune condition where when the person who has it, I'm going to say child, but, you know, it's not just children. There are some young adults with it, and I believe probably, you know, mature adults have got PANS as well, or PANDAS. PANDAS is associated with strep. So any illness that is triggered by strep, PANS is any other common chest infection, scarlet fever, you know, which is your normal childhood illnesses, really. They cause a misdirected immune response. The strep hides in the body by mimicking healthy cells. So it can be the brain tissue, heart, lungs. And so the strep hides in the body for about 6 to 8 weeks. And then eventually the immune system picks up that there's something not quite right and starts attacking these cells that it's identified. But because it's copied healthy cells, it also attacks the healthy cells as well, which in our case is the brain. So the immune system is basically attacking the brain. Every time my child comes into contact with an environmental trigger or a virus or bacteria, common cold, anything, instead of them displaying a runny nose or a cough, runny eyes, their immune system attacks the brain, causing the neuropsychiatric symptoms, which can be OCD, tics, eating restrictions, oppositional behaviour. You get urinary incontinence, high anxiety, that sort of thing.
The thing is, you can obviously bring it to life because you've got those, you know, firsthand experiences of how your children have experienced it. I think the other real thing that's been clear from what you said already, Jane, is the real lack of support, especially from like the NHS. I know we spoke even before recording this that you're based in Scunthorpe, but unfortunately, you know, stories of a lack of support for many families are very common, no matter where they are in the UK. Why do you think, though, there is such a lack of support from the NHS for something like this? Is it because even they don't understand it as well? Or, I mean, what do you put it down to from your experience?
It's a really difficult question to answer, I think, because there's such a lack of awareness of the condition. When you first go to the doctors with your child with tics, for example, that, you know, those tics could be down to several other reasons. And I was told when I took Lewis that it was quite normal for a boy of his age to experience tics that, you know, might be struggling with some anxieties. I think what needs to change is that if a child is presenting with tics, OCD and eating restrictions, that PAS Pandas should be considered, you know, in the very first instance, because left untreated, the child will 9 times out of 10 spiral and become, you know, quite severely poorly. The sooner the child is diagnosed and treated, the better the response, really. You know, you're still talking a couple of years for recovery, even in the best case scenario. And, you know, like Lewis, my 13-year-old, he's been poorly for 10 years. So, you know, we've got a lot of things that we're trying to work on with Lewis to get him well again. And he's in a much better place now. So, you know, we are getting there, and there's hope.
Yeah, of course. I mean, with Lewis in particular, as you say, because it's been such a long journey with him already. And again, we mentioned about the lack of support. What difference do you think that kind of early intervention stuff would have had for Lewis?
I feel, I mean, Lewis's teacher was great. When we first identified there was problems with him at school, she tried to deal with bullying issues. She got occupational therapy. She was aware that he was struggling with his eyesight in class. Had that teacher, that one teacher, have known about PANS, and that could have been flagged up then, you know, he would not be locked in his room 24/7 now. There's, you know, it's that raising awareness for every professional that works with children. And we're, you know, we need to talk health visitors, really, first and foremost, people that come to the child in the home before they've even started nursery or school, all teachers, all TAs, you know, they all need educating on the symptoms and how devastating the illness is to the child and to the family.
Yeah.
And then, you know, let alone the GPs and paediatricians. I've had an appointment today, actually earlier, with my paediatrician who wants to support us fully. But he's not experienced in pandas, although he, you know, he wants to help. So we're just sort of liaising now if the private doctor can instruct him how to care, you know, manage the boy's care so that it doesn't cost us money. You know, he wants to be able to get things done on the NHS so that we can access free treatment rather than paying for private treatment.
Yeah.
So, you know, it goes from the very bottom, from health visitors, even midwives, I suppose, I don't know, all the way through medical professionals, that, you know, it just needs to be out there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's a reoccurring story about, you know, connecting both health and education together, because there's so many things that affects, you know, children in different areas.
You know, and I do feel sorry for teachers in a way, because when people go into the teaching profession, I guess they don't expect to come up against so many neurodiverse conditions. And, you know, their passion is teaching children. Their passion probably isn't medical side of things, but, you know, more and more teachers and TAs are having to deal with that side of things now, so we've got to move with the times. And better than a one day staff development course sort of thing, you know. It's how it is, and, you know, it's just, and referrals, the referral system is not adequate. What CAMHS waiting lists, you know, the whole mental health thing is in crisis, really.
Well, I did want to come on to that next, actually. I wanted to ask your experience of CAMHS, because, again, unfortunately, nationally, from a lot of people we speak to, from what you hear in the media as well, it's not a good picture. How's your experience been of CAMHS?
I'm going to say negative, although I don't want it to sound too negative, if that makes sense. Lewis feels let down by CAMHS, and he eventually stopped. He refused to go. He said, "Mum, the sessions make me feel worse." There was nothing actually put in place for him, no coping strategies, no real emotional support. Our CAMHS sessions would involve me talking quite a lot about how bad Lewis has been in front of him. There was no opportunity for me to speak without him there, really. So he just looked at me, there's the session, as me saying really bad things about him, when all I was doing was explaining his symptoms. So that made his self-esteem go down even further. He just felt really bad about himself. He felt like I was feeling bad about him when I was trying to get, you know, support for him. We were offered cognitive behavioural therapy for his OCD, but I tried to explain that because it's PANS OCD, he has no control over any of his symptoms whatsoever. His brain is inflamed, his immune system's attacking his brain, and there's no way he can engage. He just can't overcome those barriers. It was really difficult to try and convey that message to, you know, a psychiatrist or psychologist. We just didn't get the right support. There was no offer of a home visit, nothing like that, you know. We just had nothing. As regards to the twins, Matthew's referral went through to CAMHS in February, and we've still not seen anyone. I've had one telephone consultation throughout that whole time. So what was that, nine months later? Nothing. And we've had frequent suicidal thoughts, trying to throw himself downstairs. Both twins have tried to get knives. I've had to restrain them, you know, and the toll that takes on me is, you know, it's horrendous, as well as the child.
Yes.
So yeah, we're not getting any support currently.
The waiting times, especially, are horrendous.
Yeah.
For many children who just need that support now, not 9 months down the line or however long it might be. I think from everything you've said, it sounds like as well, maybe even in that field, there's not enough understanding around pandas. So CBT might work for some children, but actually not for us.
Later on down the line, maybe, you know, to pick up the residual, you know, behaviours that they've learned through their illness. But we're finding that Lewis's OCD is actually getting better with the treatment that he's currently having medically. So, you know, there's an organic cause behind his OCD. So the longer we treat him with, you know, different medication, his OCD is naturally getting better anyway. So CBT was the wrong route, really.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's, you know, organisations have to take that on into account, you know, no matter how they might be. It's all about the individual, isn't it? And making sure that you meet those individual needs rather than just this one kind of tick box, how we do things. Yeah. So I think you've covered so much there, Jane. And I think there's going to be lots of parents who are going to listen to this and really connect with your story. And actually, for me as well, it's made me want to go in and find out a lot more about Pans Pandas, and I certainly will be doing that. And I'd like to stay in touch as well. Just it's a very tricky story, but it's one that, again, like I say, that, you know, we need to start raising more awareness of stuff like this now. I really appreciate you for being brave and coming and speaking about all of these things. And I do wish the very best to your three boys.
Thank you for your time.
That's fine. Thank you, Jane.
The Maize and Cultures to Parents support group are sponsoring this series of the Multi-Schools Lowdown. We offer support for families of children and young people with special educational needs in the Colchester area. To learn more and get in touch, please visit the Maize website, themaizegroup.co.uk.
Everyone is different and special in their own way. We should be including everyone, so let's start today.